Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is his.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact
scenario. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah. This is Tech Talk. Oh, man. I'm listening to some great tunes here in the background. You guys just can't hear them. I cranked it way up. I'm like, yeah, yeah. Jumping on right on top of it. I got things all lined up.
Oh, man. And I'm just sitting here half asleep waiting at the microphone for my cue. The cue comes, and there's like nothing. You know?
Yeah.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk. We're so happy to have you with us.
Absolutely. Wires, wireless, wired, I don't care. Any way you can get it, it's all good.
That's Michael the Wiz Tech Talk Castler. I'm Dave Sparky Saganaki. Welcome. Welcome so much. We're so, like I said, thanks for tolerating us.
I want to go back and start it over again. No, I can't do that.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, you might as well. Everybody's already heard it all before. Anyways, there's nothing. Yeah. All right, you know what? Hey, just to prove that I can do it. Oh, I can't even get it this time around. Oh, my gosh. Now what's happening? I don't even know what's happening.
I think you cut down the level on the auxiliary. Is auxiliary down? The slide on auxiliary?
Oh, no. You know what I think the problem was? There we go. Just to prove that I could do it. Yeah, no, I don't even want to explain. There's no reason to explain this one. It's just my idiocy.
Anybody left listening...
Believe it or not,
is it a good show today, Mike?
We're gonna have a good show today, I'm not just saying the last couple times.
We've got. Oh no, that's not true. we've got nowhere to go but up.
It's a beautiful day here.
For a change, we haven't had a nice day for a while, so this is great. Sunny,
gorgeous,
warmer.
Yeah, they're saying 78 and sunny today. It's a Saturday. Nobody should be inside listening right now. You should either be in your car listening on the way somewhere to enjoy the weather, or already out, maybe out in the back porch, firing up the grill for some early, lunch. Get some brats on there. A little burgers, and listening to Tech Talk.
Or some chickens, corn. Roasting corn on the grill.
Yeah.
The corn this year has been, because of all the rain or whatever, has been really good.
Oh, you know, I have not had any fresh corn. Normally you see the guys on the street, on the side,
You mean the farm stands?
Yeah, the farm stands. No. Yeah, I haven't.
I thought you were in the city and maybe saw the Ayate. Is that even the right way to pronounce it? Ayate. Vendors? Yes. You know, that Mexican corn with the mayonnaise and the...
Yep. No, I know
cheese.
Exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
and the lime.
I haven't tried any of those yet.
Yeah. Really? You haven't? Oh, you've never tried a lot?
They're looking at the mayo on there.
It doesn't matter. It's a meal. It's honestly a meal. If you eat that, it's hard to eat anything else.
I worked so hard to lose the weight.
Yeah.
That's all I need. Jumping into that low fat mayo again.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm saying this as yesterday I finished off my Italian beef with relish and
relish.
I meant that as the relish, the adjective, not relish, the noun.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry about that. That was confusing.
For those of you listening now from Chicago, that would be a cardinal sin. You cannot put relish on an Italian beef.
No.
If you're not from Chicago, is also just shaved roast beef.
I think even putting the sweet peppers on is a crime. You've got to have the jardinera.
Sweet, hot, and wet. No.
Yeah. I just hot and wet. That's the way I like it.
Sweet. You got to have the sweet.
Got it sweet too. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. We're way off the tech subject here. One thing that that bothers me whenever I travel out of Chicago, I'm a big fan of Subway. I love Subway. I can have that 3-4 days a week for lunch, no problem.
Yeah. Salad on top of the sandwich. That's what's great about it.
And they've started now at Subway. This is awesome. They have spinach.
So they have
these actual salads going on. So you don't have to get that cruddy, shredded, head lettuce garbage. I hate that stuff. I know there's people that are going to complain about this, but I hate that stuff. But the thing is, though...
Yeah, lettuce gives head a bad name.
In Chicago... Oh, where's the volume there for Dave? Guest number one. Bring that down. No. The thing, though, is I love my jardinara. And in Subways all through Illinois, you can get some jardinara on your...
Well, they've got three different kinds of hot peppers. They've got jardinara, they've got jalapenos and something else. There's another one.
They've got the banana peppers.
Right.
The banana peppers, too.
Yeah.
You step outside of Chicago. I haven't tried Indy, but I know if I go to Wisconsin, Minnesota... out on the East Coast, everywhere I've gone outside of the Illinois area, you can't get the jardinera. You can get jalapenos, but they do not serve the jardinera outside of it. I don't know why that is. Anyways,
I think it's a Chicago thing.
Yeah. It must be. And we should
technology. Google and the Federal Trade Commission. Do we care?
Google and the FTC. What are they doing? What are they doing? I was reading about that.
The FTC. FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, is looking at Google for antitrust stuff, mostly about pushing their own apps and searches.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't even heard that.
They could be. It's probably not that
That's
big.
That's kind of the point of them, though, isn't it? Is to push search
it's just that they're taking advantage of their market-leading position and pushing people towards their apps.
So similar to like Microsoft.
Exactly. It's going to be the lawsuit of the decade.
Yeah.
Theoretically, I don't think it'll amount to that much.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. They do have a lot of power now because they are the go-to site for most web searches and things like this. So yeah, they have the ability of pushing things that they get more money off of on the higher levels of their premier search spots.
I tried something the other day. We've kind of gotten accustomed to Google's Google used to be an incredibly clean interface, and it still is on the first page, but it gets kind of busy when you do a search these days. I mean, there's not graphics, but there's a ton of ads and stuff on the side. So I went to Alta Vista. When's the last time you went there? It's still there. Alta Vista is still there. It's a old search engine. I think it was a NEC or somebody had it. I can't remember. One of the big PC companies ran it. I don't know who has it now or what, but it was a refreshing change. It was nice to go and try it out.
Well, and that's their name, right? Alta Vista, different view.
So you're having a whole new look
on search with Alta Vista.
Yeah, right.
If I remember some of their ads.
Yeah. From so it's, I'd encourage people to try some other search engines out. Man, your chair is squeaky, dude.
I'm one of those guys. I can't sit. I'm constantly
you do that aerobic fidgeting
around. Exactly.
Yeah, aerobic fidgeting is very good for muscle tone.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah. I've heard it's good for burning some calories. Actually, fidgeters tend to burn, it's something like 75 to 100 extra calories a day just through their fidgeting. You can also burn an extra something like 50 calories a day if you're a gum chewer.
So, really?
Yeah.
Well, how much gum do you have to chew?
Well,
you should chew sugarless gum because it'll probably be a wash.
You get about 5 calories a piece from a piece of sugarless gum, even. So,
really?
So you gotta.
No
you
kidding.
Gotta be aware.
5 calories.
Yeah.
And not to mention the aspartame and all that.
So. Yeah. You're kind of juicing yourself up with a lot of little extras.
But. Okay, so Nevada. Guess what Nevada's done now?
Dave came in dragging. He's like, I don't know about that. I'm making them work.
Guess what Nevada's done now?
Nevada. I don't know.
Well, it has to do with cars.
With cars?
They did something nobody else has done about regarding cars.
Oh, have they like put in some power charge stations at their...
No,
that would have been cool.
They've passed legislation to allow for robot-driven cars or driverless cars.
Oh, yeah. Man.
This is according to Kevin Lee from PC World.
I thought maybe they passed a robot car marriage bill or something.
Well, they've logged 140,000 miles, and this is a Google, by the way.
Wow,
this is a Google project.
Okay, now they're allowing robot cars to be actually on the expressways and driving.
Well, but this is just the initial legislation.
Oh, so none are approved yet.
Right. Well, they also have to get an approval process in place. You know, does the robot have to take a road test? You know, I mean, they have to find some way to certify these cars are safe.
Yeah.
But they've taken the first step.
Yeah, and I think even if the automobiles driven by robots are probably only good 99% of the time, that's still better than your average driver on the road. I was battling it out with a guy this morning who was tailgating me and trying to pass, and it's like, look, guy, it's a one lane road and there's people in front of me. What are you gonna do? Where are you gonna go?
You must have been in Lake County. Lake County, because it's very wet, swampy, there's very few four lane roads. Mm-hmm. So there's two lane roads, and if you get stuck behind somebody that's poking along, it makes for, if you're not accustomed to driving in Lake County, it's a little frustrating.
People get frustrated. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I think though that the whole robot car thing is going to be really tough. I think a state like Nevada actually has a pretty good chance of getting some traction with it, because you've got these huge open ranges of space and the need to drive for 4 to 6 hours to get from one end of the state to the other, and that I think is going to be less likely to be seen in urban areas or even suburban areas such as most of Illinois, and you start getting to the East Coast and how compressed things are out there.
Well, things are advancing more and more. I mean, several cars now have self-parking. I know Mercedes has radar stop.
Jesus, those are cool.
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
The self-parking thing, that just looks awesome.
I don't. I'd much rather park myself. But years ago, I remember thinking this was the worst thing I could imagine, to have automatic car, self-driven cars.
Yeah.
But I'm to the age now, I'm like, yeah, okay. I'll take one of those. I'll be in the back. I'll be in the back with my iPad,
And that's the other thing though too, is that up to now you've had this really kind of controlling desire by the American driver to say, hey, the reason I love to drive is because I'm controlling my own destiny. I go where and people's perception of safety in a car is much higher than it is in a plane, even though statistically, it's
ridiculously different.
Yeah. But what you just hit upon may push some of this a little further too, is that people now are less invested in that sense of control and more into their kind of activity and saying, hey, now I have something to do in a car other than just watch the road and enjoy the scenery
and get mad at the guy in front of me
or behind me
or behind you. Well, and also you think about how this could change people's perceptions of cars. Now everybody's talking about 0 to 60 times. You're not going to care that much about that.
No.
If it's an automatic process.
Yeah. Well, and some of that's starting to go away as well with the high price of gas, and you still got people buying the chargers and the other stuff. Yeah. And I think there's going to be a market for that. But a lot of the cars that are being bought, we're seeing an influx of what are called world cars in the American market. And World Car is a car that's been designed by manufacturers such as Ford or you know, Kia or whoever, that has to be marketable in multiple global locations. So yes, they'll not only be popular in you know, South America, but in Korea, in Europe, in America. Well, they're coming to America now much more so because of the gas issues. As the gas creeps over $4, yeah, people are like, wow, I don't want to spend a lot for a car, number one. Number two, I don't want to have to, you know, deal.
Oh, well, they're changing that too. But fuel is more expensive other places, just, like, you know, over the border in Canada,
yeah,
Europe. It's much, much more expensive. So, and also they have shorter distances to go than we have to go here in the U.S. So smaller cars are more, have always been more popular in outside of the U.S.
Yep.
Now we, boy, I so lost my train of thought. I was trying to bluff my way through it and I couldn't quite do it. It's the gas price issue, and it's, take it, Mike. Take it, Michael.
I don't know where your train of thought was going. Gas price issue. I think that's a big part of it. You know, between that and the safety gains from not having people
occupied.
Oh,
I know what it was.
Otherwise,
but the cars like the Cooper Mini have established that people will pay more for smaller cars. Mm-hmm. So now you're not going to be paying less. I mean, you'll be paying less compared to a Maserati or something, but the cost of smaller cars has really crept up in the last couple of years. That's the idea. They're going to try to extract more profit from smaller cars.
Yes.
Like, for instance, the Ford Fiesta is a good example of that. That's a car in the Honda Fit class or the Nissan Versa class,
yep,
and it's priced in almost the Corolla class.
Yeah, so, yeah. I think all tricked out, those run about $16,000 or so.
Oh no, much more than that. Much more than Ford Fiestas.
The Fiestas?
Yeah, the Ford Fiesta. Well, you know, if you
maybe I'm thinking of a, I may be thinking of a different.
I don't. They're up. A lot of them have stickers of $20,000 or more.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, people are willing.
That
to
aren't that tricked
more
out. Yeah. They aren't that. And they have and that's the thing, that they're loading them up with options. It wasn't that long ago. Remember, it was only luxury cars that had power windows,
yeah,
and now every car, you know, yeah, you can't find a car without power windows.
It's funny you say that. I was just reading. One of my favorite blogs to read is Life Hacker, and
yeah,
you'll see me commenting on there occasionally and kind of snarkiness and garbage, but I do enjoy reading it. And the thing, it was an interesting little article about. I can't remember what it was. You can lower and raise your power windows with your key fob if you know a special combination on some cars.
Oh,
something,
yeah,
like this. Yeah.
Hey,
it's an interesting little thing. But there was a number of comments in there that really surprised me. People saying that, oh, I would never have a car with power windows. And
really?
All this other stuff. Yeah, that's what I said. I was like, what?
Where did you
can
get
you,
that?
Can you even find these anymore? Where do you find a car like
Toyota
that?
Toyota came out with a great car a few years ago, around 2000, I think, called the Echo. And the idea was to get great gas mileage from conventional means.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they did that was weight saving. So you couldn't get power windows with it. And
yeah,
guess what? It didn't sell at all.
Yeah.
It sold very little. But it was basically what. And I remember at the time, I don't like to think of myself this way, but I looked at it and I said, well, that's a third world car.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, no power windows. And those motors add weight and increase gas mileage. So,
yep.
I mean, gas consumption, I mean.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Every pound. Effects. It's just like flying out into outer space. you gotta worry about it.
Right. Or a boat or anything else. You know, the less weight you have, yeah, the more fuel efficient you're going to be.
I don't know. I know I'm a tech guy and all that stuff, but, you know, I've got pretty simple needs for my cars. They need to get me where I want to go. I like it if all the lights are working, which is not true about my car currently, and if the radio functions and I can hook my phone up to it, that's, you know, or my music player, whatever, yeah, whatever it is that, yeah, I have with me. It really that's
an AC. You got to have AC.
You got to have AC. Okay, yeah. That I didn't even comment on just because I assume that's kind of
a given. That's another thing that's standard equipment now. That long ago was not standard equipment.
No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. I still remember the crank windows and driving long ways with no AC and sticking your head out to blow the sweat off, you know. Speaking of space and economizing.
Nobody
space,
knows more about space than Jay Garman.
It's true. In fact, I think that our geek trivia question of last week was a was indeed a space question, in fact.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, in fact,
I think it was a shuttle. Was it a shuttle-related question?
It was about Spaceship One's first flight.
Yes.
No.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Garmin.
Hey.
Hey, the gang's all here.
Yeah, happy day. And I was reading on your Facebook feed. Good news. Conglomeration survived for another year. I wasn't able to get there this year, and I was very disappointed about it. But I was excited to see that I may have another chance here in about 10, 11 months or so.
Yeah, we're giving it another shot in April. So, fingers crossed that we're going to step back from the brink. But we, by the hair of our chinny chin chin, we got enough to keep going.
Fantastic. You're being a newly remodeled Ramada, I think it was, something along those lines.
This is actually the hotel we were originally in. We've been there like 7 of the last 10 years. But we left because the ownership group went bankrupt, and so the hotel closed for a while, and so we moved to someplace else last year, and it was interesting. They were clearly not used to it. It was a great hotel, really nice upscale place, but they'd never had a science fiction convention before, and they weren't really prepared for what kind of customer that is.
can you give our listeners a little background as to what conglomeration is?
Oh, sure. Conglomeration is Louisville, Kentucky's local science fiction and fantasy convention. It's like Dragon Con, if you've ever been to that, only reduced by two orders of magnitude in size. It's very intimate. We get around 500-600 attendees. And we're different than a lot of them, A, because we're fan-run instead of for-profit, so we don't make any money on this. We charge just enough to stage it. And two, unlike a lot of conventions, it's a one price, get you everything convention, which is not true in a lot of places. You pay for admission and you get in the door for everything. All the dance parties, the dealer room, all the games, everything. One price buys all of it.
And it's in April, typically?
Most conventions don't do it that way, so that's a little unusual. Like if we went to other conventions, you would pay for game fees, or you'd pay to enter the masquerade, that sort of thing. So it's a little different than that. Also, we only did about two or three guests, and we don't have a green room. Like there's no place for the guests to go hide other than like their actual hotel room. So, for example, when we had Harry Turtledove back here in 2007. When he wasn't doing panels, he was building Diet Coke and Mentos fountains in our courtyard and just hanging out. And he was really a cool guy. And we had Walter Koenig here, who is an amazingly fun guy, and knows a lot about sports. You know, if you ever run into him and actually get a chance to talk to him, just mention UCLA football, and he'll talk to you for an hour. And these are the kind of things you learn at our convention, is because he just hung out when he wasn't doing panels or screening his independent movies in our hospitality suite, and I think he only ate M&M's the entire weekend.
Oh, man. But he had you take all the brown ones out beforehand, I heard, right?
The green ones, because those are Vulcan.
That was it. Yeah, no, I saw some of the pictures of the conglomeration this last year. It looked like everyone was having a blast. Looked like a real nice, fun group of people. You got all types show up and have a great time. And looking at the game room got me salivating. You know, the people laid out in the game room and all the different RPGs and table games that were going on, and it made me think, oh man, I should have convinced the family to at least let me go, you know.
Yeah, honey, you stay with the kids. I have to go do research. Yeah,
because you know, I'm sure I could write this off, as for something. Well, I'm thrilled that it's gonna survive. Where do people find information? Because you've already got stuff locked in. People can start planning for it today. I know they can find stuff at jgarmin.net, but the direct one is it conglomeration.info?
Conglomeration.info or facebook.com/conglomerationky, because apparently there are other Facebook people using the phrase conglomeration for things other than science fiction conventions, and I'm trying not to judge them for this. But
yes.
We're the only conglomeration in Kentucky, so it's conglomeration KY.
We're also
pretty Google-friendly, so if you just Google conglomeration convention, worst-case scenario, you'll find our Wikipedia page. And that's how you know we're legit. We have a Wikipedia page.
Fantastic.
Yeah, Jay, you've got a Wikipedia page too, don't you?
I do not. As a matter of fact, back when I used to write for Tech Republic, some of my fans created one, and it was deprecated within 4 hours because I was, and they literally wrote a note in the back channel, not notable enough.
Ouch!
It's like, ooh. That's the harshest thing anyone's ever said to
me.
Oh
my
god! I'm not notable enough.
Not notable enough. I mean, that's worse than saying I don't like this guy. It's just like, you know what? He's not notable enough. Oh.
He's not even worth writing a page about how bad he is. He's unworthy of even that page.
Exactly. Oh, that's terrible. That's awful. I don't think I even got a. I never even rose to the level of being notable enough to say that I wasn't notable enough. So that's
what frustrates me is that a lot of my work back when I wrote Geek Trivia as a column, and I'll be doing that again in July, by the way. Now that my non-compete with my previous employer has lapsed, I'm allowed to go back and write for them. So every couple of weeks I'll throw one up there. But fans of this show may already recognize some of the questions because you guys get first dibs at my latest research.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. That's awesome. So you're back with Tech Republic then, writing?
Yes, I am. I will be back with them. And July 6th, the new Geek Trivia column will debut, and I'll be doing some other stuff with them that isn't Geek Trivia related. But about every Wednesday, something for me will pop up there. Just, you know, because I like the extra cash. It's a little, petty cash for me, and they're good to me. And apparently, I jumped on the Tech Republic forums about 2 months ago and said, hey, guys, my non-compete's up. I'm thinking about going and talking to the editorial. Does anybody here even remember me? And a bunch of the guys from back in the old days that used to argue with me in the forums jumped in, yeah, we'd love to yell at you again. Please come back and be subject to our criticism.
Oh, man. Well, and for those listeners that don't know some of the history here, when you were writing for Tech Republic, I was one of those the Watcher fans. I would sneak in. I would read your articles pretty much every time they would come out. Check them out online. Always look for the wait for the answers and was excited. And then I heard you were gone and immediately hopped on the forums and started bombarding you with requests to grace us with your presence here. And the rest is history. You've been a loyal guest and a fantastic addition to the. I don't think the show would be what it was without the Geek Trivia runner and all the great stuff that you bring for us, Jay.
Totally agree with that.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm glad you guys like it, and I wish Wikipedia did, because what frustrates me is that some of my old articles for Tech Republic are cited as reference sources in other Wikipedia articles. So I'm not notable, but you're good enough to take my work and use it as a reference. What's that about?
Oh, man. You know, and we were hoping we could ride your coattails to notability ourselves, and,
that's not going to happen.
It hasn't happened, so... Man, speaking of notability, there was two specific news items I was going to bring up for your insight or input on Jay. One is I'll start with the kind of sad one. I know as a lover of fantasy and science fiction, you and I both have a emotional attachment, if not a true one, to Terry Pratchett. And I was reading just recently that he's decided to initiate the assisted suicide process which is not legal actually in UK, but I guess that if you go to Switzerland, that Switzerland will allow you to begin filling out paperwork that shows that you are indeed taking intentional steps to end your life because of his early onset Alzheimer's and related problems that he's having. He's not expecting that to get any better.
Yeah, it's you know, he's sort of the fantasy equivalent of Douglas Adams, and everyone, I mean, everyone who's ever met him loves the guy. I mean, he, you know, not to rope it back to the convention stuff, but he's been a legend on the convention circuit for probably 30 years as one of the most gracious and funny men you'll ever run across. And, I, you know, it's just sort of tears your heart out that he's gonna be, that he knows he's already, he's on a deadline. He knows when, cause they basically charted it for him, like, you're early onset and it's gonna come on fast. So, I sort of think he's in an impossible position, and it's not just sad because we're gonna lose, you know, more Discworld novels. It's sad because we're gonna lose a really great human being.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And, you know, people that haven't seen him, he actually plays small parts in the movies that were filmed for BBC. And it was kind of neat to see him in those. I'm going to have to go drag those out again and watch those. They're tough to find in America. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that you try to find them to download from your favorite torrent site, but that may be pretty much the only way that you can get them in America, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, you'd have to basically order, sadly, probably a foreign VHS.
Yeah.
through some sort of collector site, or go to a convention where they might have it in the dealer's room, because as far as I know, they have not ported those to DVD, and if they have, they certainly haven't ported them to U.S. region DVDs.
Yeah. So. Yeah, which is too bad. They're very well produced, quite decent, very authentic to the books as well. They have one for Hogswatch, and then which is the Hogfather, which is similar to the Christmas Tale, and then there's one that was from the initial book that he wrote for the Discworld series, which was about the tourist who came through with his crate of many legs, and like I said, just really, really good, especially for those that are lovers of Pratchett, or you know, if you haven't been introduced to him, it's a nice sort of gentle way to be to be brought into the Discworld mythos.
I do warn you though, if you've not read Terry Pratchett before and you read one of his books, you're in trouble because they're addictive, and he has about like 50 in print. So that's a really good way to like blow a fair chunk of your disposable income if you decide this is something you enjoy.
Yes, yes, exactly. It's true. It's true. And I must have in my library at least 40 of those. and the worst thing of it is for a while there I would be going to the bookstore, and I'd say, oh great, I haven't read this one, and I'd pick it up and I'd buy it, I'd get it home and I'd start reading it, and I'd get to the end of the first chapter and go, oh gosh, this seems awfully familiar, and sure enough, you know, so I've got like two copies of Eric, which is one of the Discworld books, and it's like, but they make great gifts though anyways, so
they do, they very much do.
On lighter news though, which I was also going to mention to you, we're also too, I know both of us, lovers of video games and historic video games, and I was going to ask you what you thought about Duke Nukem Forever. It's here. It's real. I've seen the ads, and the ads are great. I don't know what that says about the game itself. The graphics look a little down, you know, compared to what you would see typically today. But as far as I'm concerned, that's actually kind of okay. That's a little more authentic. And the humor seemed appropriate, and the gameplay and the little tricks, you see him, you know, snapping his fingers at things and making them open and all this other business. Have you had a chance to check it out or heard anything about it?
I have heard a lot about it. I have not had a chance to check it out. It's sort of been compared to that movie that came out a little while back called The Expendables, which is basically an homage to 1980s action films.
Yes.
Sort of Duke Nukem is like an intentionally anachronistic throwback to the original like platform Doom-style shooters that were so, you know, that sort of took the world by storm in their over-the-topness. Mm-hmm. I guess it has value in that, but it's really getting torched by like modern video game reviewers because it's so anachronistic and such a sort of a basic throwback. So, I don't think there's any way this game could have lived up to the, you know, 13-year wait. You just couldn't. There's no way it could have been as good as everyone hoped it was. But I do get sort of there's sort of two schools of thought about it from the people I talk to. There's a smaller group that says, you know, it's great. It takes me back to that time in my life when I played these kind of games. Yep. And it doesn't matter if it's a great one of those games. It's just good to have a new one of those games. Oops, and then there's the larger group that's sort of, okay, they sort of just put this out so they could get everyone that was dying to buy Duke Nukem Forever to pay for Duke Nukem Forever. And they didn't put a lot of effort into making it a great contemporary game. So this probably will be the last Duke Nukem they ever make, and they're sort of cashing out on that sort of pent-up demand, and it's done now. So I don't know what side of the fence I come down on. I'll have to wait until I actually play it. But I will say that sort of the public vibe I'm getting is it's more towards blatant cash grab than you know, faithful homage to an era.
Yeah. I was afraid of that, too, you know, and seeing it. I guess there's a line there where, you know, to a degree, that's almost okay in my mind, where it's like, as long as, you know, I understand that you're trying to get money out of this basically by flogging this dead horse, but I was, you know, it just happened to be at that time, you know, the Duke Nukem 3D was around when I was really into this stuff, and I have such great memories of it that if it's good enough to be playable and still brings back enough of those memories, it probably would be worthwhile for my money to pay for it. You know, I can see it very much not appealing to newer gamers. The new style games are very different. I mean, I remember that with Unreal Tournament, when Unreal Tournament came out, and even Quake 3, you know, thinking, you know, this is a different style of game. This isn't the kind of thing that I've kind of grown up with and want to be doing. And I think that people that grew up on those games aren't going to probably like this game much in the same way that I don't really like Unreal Tournament and games like that all that much myself.
You and I are in the same camp on that. Although the average age of a gamer, this came out recently, is 37. And the average age of a game buyer is 41. So we're not exactly wrong going after guys in our cohort. That's not a bad idea. Yeah. But, you know, I also, when I go back and I play throwback games or just play classic games on newer platforms, like you can play Super Mario Brothers on the Wii, mm-hmm. I remember what I liked about them. You know, it doesn't matter about the graphics, just the gameplay was fun. But I also remember what I don't like about them, which was, like, the absence of save points. You know, I remember having to stay up or leave the Nintendo on pause for, like, overnight when I beat Super Mario Brothers 3 because, like, there's no going back.
Yep.
There's no picking up where you left off.
Yep.
It's you beat the whole thing in a setting or you don't.
Yep. I remember that as well. Yeah. It's something with, like, Contra. Contra is one of the side scrollers that we used to love, too. And that was another one where, yeah, you'd stay up pretty much all night trying to get just a little bit farther so you could see the giant screaming turtle at the end.
Those were productive times. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
They were.
Yeah.
There was no easy mode, there was no save point. I don't care how cool you think you are in Halo, I want to see you beat all of Halo on base difficulty with no save points, and then come talk to you about how a great gamer you are.
Exactly. Oh, man. Well, speaking of staying up all night, we don't want to do that here today, so we should probably move things along. we were looking and talking about the Geek Trivia question. Customer Jones, of course, sent us in a great answer to it, but the question itself was about Spaceship One's first space flight, and something got left in orbit, if I remember the question correctly.
Well, yes and no. So Spaceship One has flown actually very few actual space flights, and it never left the atmosphere. Folks wonder how you can do that. Well, that's sort of how they won the X Prize. They gave up on leaving the atmosphere and dealing with the complicated process of reentry. They just got to the 100-kilometer altitude, which is the aviation definition of space, and got to enough altitude and enough speed where you can have zero gravity for part of your flight. But they never left the atmosphere. And it's since been retired. It's now the Smithsonian. So Spaceship One has never left the atmosphere. It's never even gotten to orbit or done anything like an interplanetary flight, except a part of it has. And the question was, what part of Spaceship One has actually left the atmosphere, left orbit, and is now in the middle of interplanetary flight? And the answer is, there's about 4-inch circular diameter chunk of its carbon composite skin was put as a tribute onto the New Horizons Pluto probe in 2006.
Oh.
And it's got inscriptions on it dedicated to Spaceship One. To quote, to commemorate its historic role in the advancement of spaceflight, this piece of Spaceship One is being flown on another historic spacecraft, New Horizons. New Horizons is Earth's first mission to Pluto, the farthest known planet in our solar system. And on the back it says, Spaceship One was Earth's first privately funded manned spacecraft. Spaceship One flew from the United States of America in 2004. And it's literally just bolted on next to a strut on the outside. And it's on its way to Pluto right now. And New Horizons, for those that don't remember, had a whole bunch of these kind of PR-related things on it, and it didn't amount to a lot of weight. But it's got a quarter from the state of Maryland, where it was built. Got a quarter from the state of Florida, where it was launched. It's got a CD-ROM with pictures of everyone that built it, and it's got another CD-ROM of 434,000 people that signed up to send your name to Pluto Project at NASA. So it's and probably the most interesting or creepy part of it. The guy that discovered Pluto, Clyde W. Tombaugh, some of his ashes are on board Spaceship One. So he is actually the, or at least his remains, are the furthest traveled piece of human in history.
Oh, wow.
Because
wow.
It's flying out to the deep solar system.
Yeah, of course, and we could get into a whole other discussion about why his remains went out instead of Percival Lovell's, but...
yes, we could.
Man, you know, they're going to have to start just shipping up memorabilia craft, I think. They're starting to add so much to these supposed scientific craft that is, you know, to basically to solve our own egos, it's going to become more efficient and less costly to just create a whole other rocket for all the memorabilia that they want to go up with these pieces.
Yeah, I would think that, you know, that at some point, like, some private spaceflight company will just start doing, like, quick orbit and back cargo jaunts, where they just, this has been in space, and we've certified it, you know?
yeah, exactly. Well, what should we be thinking? And I want to shout out to Customer Jones, who, of course, nailed it, as always. She does a fantastic job. And
the question.
Thank you. The question, and what should we, or at least what should Customer Jones be thinking about for next week?
Well, this being summer movie season, I'm going to do a little movie related geek trivia. 17 years ago next week, the Motion Picture Association of America debuted the PG-13 rating, which was sort of a halfway point between PG and R, and it did this because of two movies that are geek favorites. Both created by a famous Hollywood geek, as you would say, that sort of pushed the envelope of what was PG, and he didn't want them to get redone as R when they were re-released later, so he basically had to ask the MPAA for a middle ground rating. So what were the two geek favorite movies that prompted the creation of the PG-13 movie rating?
Ooh. Oh, that's a great question. Man, as usual, have absolutely no clue. I'll have to wait till next week or until Customer Jones sends me the answer.
She hasn't yet.
Not yet. Although I'm not looking at my Twitter feed right now, so she could have already put it up there. Oh man. Well, Jay, I'm sorry. I've got to rush us to a close here. We're running tight with getting our spots going and stuff like that. But as always, it's great to have you on. I'm again excited to hear about conglomeration.info. People can go to check out for that. And of course, more in great Jay stuff at jgarman.net, as always. And I hope that the weather is at least somewhat comparable to what we're getting up here.
Oh, it's beautiful today for once.
Fantastic.
It's really stopped raining.
Fantastic. The whole Midwest then is enjoying it. So we'll get out and enjoy it then. We'll let you run and have a great day and a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take it easy, buddy.
All right, take care.
Take care, Jake.
Jay Garman. Oh, always great stuff.
Another fantastic job.
Love having him on. We are full and tight here, so I'm going to throw up some little bits and nuts, and we'll be back at you in just a couple minutes.
See you in a bit.
WRLR. 98.3 FM.
Hey, what's that doohickey you got there?
It's a pumpinator from What's It and Doohickey.
What's it do?
Hello, it's a portable water balloon filler. You want to see my bucky balls?
Your what?
My bucky balls from What's It and Doohickey. They're 216 BB-sized magnets. I got a set for my nephew, so I had to get one for myself. And I also got this ugly doll for my niece's birthday.
What's It and Doohickey, huh? What else have they got?
They got toys and magic tricks, games and puzzles, and all sorts of things you never knew you wanted. What's It and Doohickey Toy Company is located at 346 North Milwaukee Avenue in downtown Libertyville, with parking in the back. Their phone number is 847-367-9000. Their website is www.whatsit-doohickey.com. The store is open 7 days per week.
What's It and Doohickey is a proud supporter of WRLR.
All Custom Electronics Incorporated offers service for all of your audio and video needs. Surround yourself with many audio and video possibilities. They have many brands of equipment available. Their services include installation of in-wall, in-ceiling, surround sound, home theater, and commercial electronic sound systems. All Custom Electronics Incorporated is a proud sponsor of WRLR. They have over 14 years of experience to help you design and build your dream sound system. All Custom Electronics can be reached at 847-254-1234 or at allcustomelectronics.com.
As you may know, WRLR is a nonprofit, all-volunteer station. All of us here give our time, resources, and energy to provide the community, and the world for that matter, with unparalleled entertainment and information. Our motto, radioactive means involvement, our involvement alone isn't enough. There are operating costs that go well beyond our immediate resources. We need you. Community involvement is everyone's involvement. Please go to our webpage, WRLR.fm, and click on donate. The rest is easy. The amount is up to you. Our budget is like yours. Every contribution is an important part of keeping us all radioactive.
This is Al Weissman, and on a recent episode of In a Nutshell, we highlighted the music of the unforgettable Patsy Cline. Tune in on the next episode of In a Nutshell, where we'll highlight another great recording artist. Thursdays, 1 to 2 p.m. on WRLR, 98.3 FM, streaming live online.
Now, this is me in a nutshell. Help! I'm in a nutshell! How did I get into this nutshell?
All right.
We're back.
We are. We're here. We're back. We're ready to rock and roll and all that good stuff. Boy, it was great to hear from Jay again, as always. I want to mention now next week, a couple things. I want to mention some housekeeping stuff. Next week, we're going to have on good friend Matt Richtel, who I now can introduce as Pulitzer Prize. Wait, how about that? Is that an order? Hey, everybody in the
like
brothers.
Like the Pulitzer's not good enough. You how can you cheapen a Pulitzer by mistaking it for a Nobel? Yeah.
I'm good at that.
What a guy. You're a good friend. Yeah.
When he first came on, he was merely journalist Matt Richtel, and then he became best-selling author Matt Richtel the next time we had him on, and now he's Pulitzer Prize winning, award-winning Matt Richtel. He's going to be on next week talking to us about memory and computers and electronica and how it's all related, and also to drumming up readers for his next new book, which is called Devil's Playground. It's another
Devil's Playground?
Yeah, it's another Nat Idle mystery thriller. I'm in the midst of it right now, and it's pretty good. Starts off with a bang, again, as is Matt's want. So I'm sure that we'll speak to him about that. And one thing I wanted to mention, I'm getting a lot of stuff online on justin.tv/WRLR and also through the Twitter feed and so on. People really dislike the new camera imagery business that's going on Justin TV. I apologize. I'm not.
Justin TV hosts our video.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Yes, they do. And we, in the past, we'd had, I think, like a split screen double or split screen quadruple kind of view of the some of the 3-4 cameras that are available in the studio. Now it's split screen with 5 or 8 or something, and they're basically so tiny they're completely worthless. Not that we're that.
See, I like that.
Not you know, that we're
anything
that great
that
to look at.
Pardon me?
I said, not that we're that great to look at
that's,
anyway.
That's but. My point. You know, I'm sorry for the viewers that you have to put up with that, but the smaller we look, the better, I think. But.
I just want to let people know we hear you. I'm passing it along. There's not a lot that we can do for you at the moment, but I agree with them though. I prefer honestly the what I would love to have is in fact little desk cams and have those set up and you could actually see us speaking and it'd be more like a true intimate sort of talking heads kind of thing, you know?
So people can see facial expressions and stuff.
Facial expressions and
eye rolls, they can see eye rolls.
Yeah, we have to more careful on some of these interviews one way
and booger hunts they can
you know. Oh yeah, I forgot about the booger hunts. Yeah, normally you'd still just turn away, I suppose. We'll have to have a privacy blanket.
Yeah.
Roll the privacy blanket over there. Wow. I'm worried. Oh my gosh, what
you mean like Michael Jackson's son?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Sit back, relax. Listen to the cool sights of the week.
Yeah, because we're rushing it here. Oh my gosh, I'm pulling them up now. First one I've got for you.
Oh, you don't have to rush now that you're here.
Is maybe
once you get here, you don't have to rush.
Oh, that's true.
As long as you get here in a reasonable amount
of time.
That's
true. Well, it's that definition of reasonable. But hey, the first thing I wanted to tell you about is there is a great. Great, great app. Now, you know I'm a Kindle lover now that I've gotten my Kindle. But one of the things that that people like to do, of course, on just regular reading is to read the news and read interesting articles and things that are going on. And there's been some ways that you can do that. Instapaper is one that will allow you to save articles and send them and curate them yourself and send them. But I stumbled across a guy who is actually curating content for your Kindle just because he wants to, and he's picking out great articles and news items and things from across the major distributors and sending them to your Kindle if you allow him to. You have to give him your Kindle email address, and he'll shoot them to you about once a week.
Yeah,
like 6 or 7 of some of the more interesting and exciting technology articles that are out and about.
So he's like a sort of a Tech Reader's Digest without the abridging or
exactly
condensing.
So you get the full article on your Kindle. He only sends you stuff that he can send the full article for, and it's just good stuff. All you have to do is go there and subscribe. His name is Dave Pell. His most recent articles are from The Atlantic. He's got The Brain on Trial, How to Land Your Kid in Therapy. He's got one from Faster Times, An AOL Content Slave Speaks Out. That might be a good one for you there, Dave. Weren't you a big AOL fan there?
I'm not a big AOL fan. It just happens to be my email address.
Oh, okay.
They're not that bad. I mean, considering the length of time I've been with them, but anyway. AOL's all right. They've got Huffington Post now. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. No, they got HuffPo on there. And that's another article they've got is a HuffPo article. So all good stuff. You might want to take a look at that. I'm going to give you one more quick one since we're on the subject of things that are good for you and all this. I've got some friends and family actually that have had some brain events, I guess you'd call them, strokes or traumatic events that have affected their functionality and ability. But I think it's something that we all kind of worry about as we get older is what's happening in our head, what's happening with our noggin. And here, you know, there's a lot of things online right now that are verified and some are unverified and all that. Brain Games 2.0 for your Nintendo DS. A lot of these have been kind of shot down. But they do have, called Brain Workshop sourceforge.net, and it's a free and open source BrainWorks game that has actually gone through some scientific testing and been verified that this type of game, anyways, could actually assist you in maintaining short-term memory. And
not a minute too soon.
Yeah, exactly.
thank goodness it's here.
Exactly. It's built upon working memory and fluid intelligence studies. These findings have been replicated twice, it says. They've got links to both those. And Brain Workshop uses triple NBAC and arithmetic NBAC philosophies or technologies. You'll have to read up on it yourself, but if you're looking for a good way to keep yourself sharp as a tech and maybe aren't interested in plopping down a couple of bucks for
some Lord knows we all love tax. Yeah.
Exactly. go to brainworkshop.sourceforge.net. Cool stuff. I've had some fun playing with it. I got the kids playing it a little bit there too. So it is actually just kind of fun as well as being good for you. And that's always good. And man, it's time. It's time for us to close this one out. You know what I'm going to do? This is almost kind of qualifies as another cool site of the week is the Amazon Cloud Player. I've been using it quite a bit. You can upload your own music to it. They give you 2 gig for free, so that's quite a bit of music anyway.
Sure.
Well,
but it's if you're going to take the trouble to upload it, that's a lot. Actually,
it's more than nothing.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about it is if you buy music on Amazon, it'll automatically go into your cloud, so you can play it then. Now, I've got it on my Android. I've got it on my desktop. You can have it on your iPhone, your iPad. It's web-based, so if I'm sitting here at the studio and I want to play some music that I forgot, but, hey, I remembered it in my Amazon cloud.
It's on your cloud, yeah.
It's right there, and so it's all legit, legal, real stuff that you can put up on there and do it. Another thing that I would mention with the Amazon MP3 store and going and looking around in there is there are tons and tons of free music out there. You just got to take a quick look for them and find the $0 cost stuff that's really
on
good.
On
Amazon, the stuff that's really good. A lot of people do promo songs and things like this that they put up, people that you've heard of, Andy DeFranco and others. But then there's a lot of indie stuff and a lot of world stuff, too. And I love that. I just love that. In fact, I'm going to play you something from...
I've got a ton of world stuff if you want it.
Oh, well, you know, you're going to like some of this stuff probably that we're going to play right now. I'm gonna play a little, let's see, how much, this is by an artist called Weep from the Project Afar album, which is a completely free download off of Amazon, and you can grab it and do and play with whatever you want with it. The song is called When I'm Wrong, and it's a nice kind of mellow little song for us to play. Another good album you can check out is Scandinavian Gold, Volume 2, is also got some pretty good stuff on it as well. So I'm going to leave you with that, though, with When I'm Wrong by Weep off of Project Afar. Boy, what a great show. And don't forget to tune into us next week, techtalk.wrlr.fm, or send us an email, techtalk@wrlr.fm.
And this is WRLR Round Lake Heights.
It absolutely is. And I'm going to, I better stop the other music before I play the new music. Oh, I've had nothing but problems with all this. Here we go.
You need a producer.
You do.
It's
true.
You do. Probably at least one.
It's true. All right, here we go. Let's try this again. Weep with When I'm Wrong. Thanks again, guys.
See you next time.